Good morning, everyone. The numbers are dizzying and the headlines are sobering, but it appears this morning as an eerie echo to the moments after 9/11 when President Bush suggested that the way out of the crisis was to keep buying, keep purchasing, keep the economy going. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson yesterday announced a new $800 billion rescue plan with a commitment of $200 billion to increase the availability of student loans, auto loans, and especially credit cards. The advice being more loans, more debt, more spending, the economy comes out of this crisis. Well, does that work? We thought we'd take a slightly different look at this crisis this morning from the perspective of someone who may be getting money thrown at him and the urging from the people supplying the money that he should be lending that money out. Mike Menzies joins us. He's the president and CEO of Easton Bank and Trust in Easton, Maryland. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, John. Good to be with you.
Now, I just wanted, I've been yearning to do this for weeks, but I really wanted to talk to somebody who's in this kind of traffic cop position between the money coming in from the Fed. And I know you're not precisely in this situation, but you're a banker. You know what this is all about, and is being encouraged to now take that money and lend it out. It appears so far that despite what the Fed has done and the Treasury have done with supplying money to the credit markets, the lending has not started yet. What's your view of how this definitely works when money is being supplied on the back door and you're being encouraged to lend it out the front door?
Well, John, this program that was most recently announced is a program that provides liquidity to community banks. It's really not described as the Fed taking a wheelbarrow and dumping money in the bank. What's going on is that there's a market that's securitized assets of credit cards, student loans, car loans, and SBA loans, which are really important to community banks, where we can write those loans, and the Federal Reserve will buy those loans from aggregators. There are aggregators who purchase loans from community banks all around the country.
Now, you're a smart guy. Let me just deconstruct some of that stuff.
Okay,
now, the security, I can help you do that as well.
Okay.
Obviously, it's not a wheelbarrow of money. But
right.
I guess the simple question for me is, because of what Henry Paulson did yesterday, who do you say yes to on, say, a student loan or a car loan or some consumer loan that you wouldn't have said yes to had the Treasury not done that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, and I don't know that I'm going to be able to tell you that we're going to say yes to a bunch of people differently, because community banks still have relationships to underwrite loans, determine that there's income to repay the loans, and they're still saying yes and have been saying yes from the get-go. Community banks really haven't locked up their lending and locked up their credit.
No, and we've talked to community banks. Actually, the credit is pretty healthy down at the community bank level. But just put the hat of a more regional bank on and describe to me what the predicament is for a larger bank that's maybe a little, once removed from the community level. What's their resistance or hesitation?
Well, see, their resistance is that many of those banks are basically brokering loans. They're writing loans and selling them into the market, and a large volume of loans are actually brokered. They're securitized. And the marketplace has stopped buying those pools of loans. It's constipated.
So as a banker, let me just get this really precise here. So as a banker, okay, if you're writing loans and you can't sell them the next day, you're not going to write anymore. You're basically taking the open for business sign down a little bit.
If you're a large bank and you depend upon the securitized market for your liquidity and you depend upon being able to sell those loans in order to write loans, you're right. It'll lock down. And that's what happened with SBA loans in October. And SBA loans are really important. They're a third of the capital that goes into small businesses. And if you can't sell the SBA loans, whether you're a big or a small bank, that constipates the system, that slows down credit. This particular move from yesterday will, in fact, over time, help provide some liquidity to small business loans, car loans, student loans, and the like. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to cause lenders to say, come in, I'm going to throw the money at you because the government's giving it to us and we don't need to underwrite it. That's not going to happen, but it will provide liquidity to these markets.
So I might be able to go into a bank today and have a much warmer reception than I would have had last week, in theory.
I think you'll go into a community bank today. I hope you will receive just as warm a reception as you have always received, but your rate hopefully will be a little bit lower.
Right.
because there's more liquidity.
And mortgage rates took a really steep dive yesterday, which is a very interesting story. There was another interesting story out of the FDIC, and I want to get your banker perspective. And I have to say, you're a pretty darn good salesman for the community bank industry this morning, Mike.
That's easy.
The FDIC reported that the number of troubled banks, watch banks, banks that it's really concerned about, maybe going under, doubled yesterday, and the number was something on the order of 174, something like that. How concerned are you in a time when this number is rising that banks are going to feel secure enough to actually do the kind of lending that the Treasury says needs to happen?
Well, remember, John, there are over 8,000, I'll repeat that number, there are over 8,000 community banks in this nation that are somewhere around or below $10 billion in size. So, yeah, 100 or 200 community banks or 200 banks in general, that's a big number and that's worrisome, but there are lots and lots of community banks around this nation, and they're not all going under. The lion's share of them, like Eastern Bank and Trust and many other members of our trade association, the Independent Community Bankers of America, are solid as a rock, and they're still making loans, they're still getting deposits, they're healthy, they're doing well. The banks that are in stress are those in markets where their real estate has tanked because of over-liquefying those markets and too much liquidity going into real estate. So they're struggling. But this is not 5 or 10% of the banks in the nation. It's a very small percentage.
All right. Well, that's very reassuring. Now, Mike, let's talk about real estate for a moment, because Secretary Paulson again and again came back to, we need to get mortgage money freed up, which seems to me to be part of the problem that got us into this whole mess, a year ago. But what's it going to take for people to start buying homes again? I mean, we're seeing prices down record levels yesterday. We're seeing major markets around the country reporting, spikes downward on the order of 18% in home values. What are the triggers that are going to indicate that people are coming back into the real estate market?
You know, John, that's the macroeconomic question. I certainly don't have the answer. My belief is that it takes two primary components, and one is price and the other is confidence. At some point in time, markets reach a point where the price is such that greed overcomes fear and people go buy. The other issue clearly is confidence. And when the American public has confidence that investing in these kinds of assets is a good long-term decision, then we'll see the inventories consumed and we'll get back toward a more stabilized market. The cost of money is certainly not the issue. The difference between a 5% or a 6% mortgage is not the issue. The issue is confidence and price.
Right. So it's psychological. And these efforts, even though they are $800 billion, are really – it's not clear if they're going to affect that sort of psychological trigger that's really going to cause the greed to overtake the fear. Well, Mike, I'm speaking with you from – you're in Naples, Florida, right?
I'm visiting my 88-year-old mom with my two boys on vacation. It's gorgeous down here. It's almost as beautiful here as it is in Easton, Maryland.
So you're getting ready for Thanksgiving, right?
That's exactly right.
And as a bank president, are you worried that sitting around the table, everybody who comes to visit is going to be asking you, so what's going on with the economy, Mike? I mean, what's happening here? I mean, what do you think about this Paulson guy? This is kind of getting you up to speed on that conversation. You're going to be having that tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'm going to tell them I sold my Gulfstream, my Maserati, and my Viking yacht, and I'm just sitting back waiting for the market to correct.
So are you confident that these efforts are going to come out the other side, or are we in uncharted territory and we could be looking at some aftershocks next year?
Next year is going to be a challenging year for everybody. There's no doubt about it. But I'm confident that we're going to go through a process of change, that we're going to deal with the excesses of the past 7 or 8 years, and that we still have the greatest economy, the greatest government, the greatest business model in the world today. It's just going to take a while to flush through these excesses. But I'm not going to lose sleep.
I have to say, I've talked with a lot of economists over the last couple of months, and I have to say the window you provide is a lot clearer and certainly a lot more reassuring. I have one last question for you. As a banker, we've been doing something this week. We've been asking people to give us their most annoying phrases in the English language they would love to have eliminated. It occurs to me that as a banker and an economist, you probably encounter some corporate phrases that you'd just as soon do without. You got one for me? Securitize, would you love to get rid of that?
Yeah, securitize, and I guess the phrase I'd most like to destroy in our economy is the word broker.
All right. We're out of time, Mike. Thanks so much, John, for being with us. Mike Menzies is president and CEO of Easton Bank and Trust in Easton, Maryland, with a mid-level view of this $800 billion crisis.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.